Okay, well, our last viewer coming in, welcome back. I'm Grace Mentor, and I will be moderating this session today. We would like to take this time to thank our generous sponsors of the School for Successful Ranching for their support of this program and their commitment to producer education. They have small displays set up in the hallway right outside of these doors, and we ask that you visit their booths in the Expo Center and thank them. We couldn't do this program without them. Our sponsors include Capital Farm Credit, Cattlemen's Education Series, Corvetta, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Positive Beads, Revo Agrofinance, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, and the Texas Beef Quality Assurance. Our next presentation is How Tax Reform Affects Cattle Producers, presented by Paul Niefer and Brant Self, with Clifton Larson Allen. Please join me in welcoming them.
Thank you, Grace. Actually, I was talking with Grace beforehand, and probably you don't realize that Barry White knows taxes, because I have a little cold right now, so this is not my typical voice, but I was talking with Grace, and I mentioned that my wife always wanted to be full of Grace. She had an aunt called Grace, and we ended up with four boys, and they all start with G, Garrett, Grant, Gannon, and Gage, and she always wanted to be full of Grace. Well, we actually got our first grandchild, which is a granddaughter, and her name is Madison Grace. So my wife finally got her wish a little bit, but we'll go ahead and get started here. Just quick little background. I started a blog about 10 years ago called FarmCPAToday.com. Is anybody subscribed to it right now? We had somebody come up beforehand and mention. So it's very easy to subscribe to. It talks about things related to the business of farming, a little bit of a tax theme, especially with tax reform. There's about 2,000, maybe 2,500 blog posts on there. It's very easy to sign up for. Again, farmcpatoday.com. If you don't get anything else, hopefully you can sign up for that. We typically will post 3 to 5 times a week, sometimes less, sometimes a little bit more. So that's just one thing I wanted to mention. Again, right down there. Yeah, I think this is getting a little bit outdated. We're actually about the 8th largest CPA firm in the United States, professional services firm. Also want to make a mention that if you do want to come by and talk a little bit more technical tax stuff, we have a booth here. It's booth 713 downstairs. So if you want to stop by, we're here today and tomorrow. So there will definitely be somebody there that can talk a little bit more specific tax type stuff. I always start off with this. My father was born in 1912 in South Dakota, was more of a farmer than a rancher. I grew up in southeastern Washington state, but we had about 35 head of registered Black Angus until I was about 9 years old, when for some reason my father sold them off. But I always start off with that. That little critter there is me about 50-some years ago. That's my father operating that combine. For the younger people in here, I see some younger people. Notice all the advanced safety apparatus on that combine. I'm not sure how I didn't fall off of that thing, but it's a little hard to tell. That right there is about a 55% slope. Just to give you an idea, that's about 120, 150-acre field. From the top to bottom, there's 450 feet of elevation change. You guys have your hill country. Out in our area, we call those hills bumps. So that's because I've been in some of that hill country. And a little town of Dixie, Washington. I know that there's little towns like that in Texas. Our little town of Dixie was about 130 kids. I went to a little grade school that had first and second grade in one room, third and fourth in another, fifth and sixth in another, only 6 kids in my class. And the saying about Dixie, and you may know a town like this, I'm sure it's not your town, but the saying about Dixie is, if a husband and wife get divorced, are they still brother and sister? So that's the type of town I grew up in. So, and actually, I now live about 20 miles away from there. So I'm going to turn this over to Brant. Brant will take the first few slides, and then I'll jump in, and I'll let you have the little clicker there, Brant, for the first couple slides, and then I'll do most of I think I've given a talk like this probably 70 times in the last year and a half. Last year I was in a rental car 133 days, just because National Car Rental keeps track of how many days I'm in a rental car. So with that, go for it, Brant.
Thanks, Paul. So we kind of joking this morning. I think I don't know if there's any truth to this, but I'm apparently the pretty face on the stage today. So take that for what you will. So
my name is Brand. It's a low hurdle to get over.
So my name is Brand. I'm a principal here in our Fort Worth office. So work with a lot of clients down here in Fort Worth. And Paul has been a great resource for us in the firm and also locally. He comes down to Texas a lot to help us with a lot of our clients and some of our more complicated tax planning issues. So if you're not signed up for his blog, please do that. It's good information. It's a good quick read and that sort of stuff. So if you're in the presentation before with Mr. Brown, it was a great presentation. We were kind of talking, you know, our presentation is not going to be nearly like that because it's going to be much more technical. So we hope you don't see any glazed over looks, but we're going to try to get through this as best we can. But please ask questions as they come up if you have any. So this first slide, really all it's meant to do is compare the current tax rates versus the old tax rates. And so you can see, you know, the IRS basically, with the individual tax rates, with QBI, which we'll get into a little bit later, the C-Corp rates went down a lot. And so this is just show the decrease in the tax rates. And they were not nearly as significant as a decrease in the C-Corp rate, but you can see for the most part across the board, these all did go down. There is a small income tax bracket. What is that, Paul, 200 to 400? Is that what that is?
On the single side where the rates are a little bit higher, but not too bad. And also for our middle-class taxpayers that are married couples with kids and so on, there's actually about $85,000 of income, $85,000, where their rate went from 33% all the way down to 24%. So that's about a third savings there, plus some other changes that we'll talk about here in a little bit. You know, I've reviewed probably 100, 200 individual returns so far this tax season, and I'm seeing a lot of cases where tax liability has definitely come down, especially if you don't live in like New Jersey or New York or California where you have that state income tax liability where you have the cap on that. So definitely have seen rates or the overall income come down based on the same amount of income.
So this is just to talk a little bit about the corporate taxes. So as you probably all heard, it's hard not to hear about it with the media, but the flat tax rate of 21% for C-Corps. The corporate AMT was repealed. I think there was some celebration from the CPA side of things for sure on that. Just a small note, there may be an actual 40% tax increase for some ranchers who were always used to keeping their taxable income below $50,000. And we'll kind of get into, I think there's an example here that kind of goes through that. So here's just a basic example. So you have your ranch partnership. They have four equal C corporation owners, okay? So then you have the partnership income spits off $200,000 of income. And at the top, you'll see the under the old law, the corporations each paid $7,500 or $30,000 in total taxes. Under the new law, each corporation would pay $10,500 or $42,000 for a 40% increase. So, you know, the name of the game for a C-Corp has always been to zero out that income, right? And so that's just kind of an example to show kind of the differences there on that lower income.
Yeah, most of our farm clients that operate or ranch clients that operate as a C-Corp historically, I can tell you within $50 what their income's going to be. It's $49,975 because that's what they want it to be because they know it's 15%. Well, that's no longer true. There's been some chatter. I think somebody in Congress is proposing to bring back the 15% bracket on the first $50,000. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. There's just no desire in Congress really to open up the tax law and reduce the taxes again. So
estate and tax rates, these are pretty small, but in general, the tax rates, can't even see that, Paul. In 2017, the tax rate was 39.6, and so the tax bracket in 2018 through 2025, and most things with the IRS, there's always a sunset, so it's 37,000%, or 37%, excuse me, through 2025. The actual exemption for 2019 has doubled, so it's at $11.4 million now per individual, so that's now double, so that's a huge increase, but again, that's set to sunset in 2025, so these next few years, and I don't know, Paul, have you heard any rumblings? What do we think is going to happen,
you know,
with this rate?
Right now, we know that we have Trump in the White House, we have Republican control in the Senate, and we have Democratic control in the House. if in 2020 that flip-flops, because remember, we got a lot more Republican senators coming up for re-election in 2020. Who knows how the presidential elections are going to go? But if it really flip-flops to the Democratic side, this law is not going to make it to 2025. You're going to be lucky to see this go through 2020, maybe 2021. So if you are a ranch family and you have a lot of land that's built up over the generations, you could easily be worth $30 to $35 million as a farm couple and completely get out of the estate tax. But in order to do that, there are certain things that you need to do now. So this isn't really a class on estate tax planning. Maybe we'll do that next year for you. But this certainly, there's a great opportunity to transfer those assets to the next generation or even skip multiple generations, as in the previous session, he was talking about the grandparents jumped it all the way down to the grandkids. So that's something to definitely take a look at.
Yeah, and the other thing, just on the rate, you know, you see you hit that 37% tax bracket at $12,500. So although it is graduated, you get to that top bracket really, really quickly. Standard deduction, so this has been widely publicized. You know, that in the media, a lot of times they would talk about you got a double deduction. Well, that's only partly true. So the standard deduction did pretty much double. Married filing jointly is 24, singles 12. But the flip side that wasn't as well, I guess, covered by the media was that personal exemptions are repealed. So when you kind of do the math on the prior law and current law, in 2017, a married filing joint couple had basically a $20,800 deduction. In 2018, it's $24,000. So it did increase, but it's not doubled, as you may have heard, or maybe even thought that until you maybe get your tax return this year and you're like, I was expecting this to be doubled. Why is it not? This is the reason why, is because the personal exemptions were appealed.
I was actually having a meeting with some of my partners, some of our staff up in Minneapolis a couple months ago, and I didn't realize one of my partners in Illinois has 8 kids under the age of 17. And if you look at that, 10 times $4,100, that's a $41,000 deduction that he and his spouse are no longer going to get. Now, I did ask him if he knew how to stop having all that kids, and he figured that out. So, okay.
Here's kind of where the IRS gave back a little bit. So they took away the personal exemptions. The child tax credit did increase from $1,000 to $2,000. So there's no change to what the definition of a qualifying child is. There's an additional $500 credit for dependent that's not a qualifying child. But the refundable portion of this is $1,400, and that is indexed for inflation. So say you get the $2,000, and if your taxable income is not high enough to fully utilize the full $2,000, you're not going to get a $2,000 refund on that. You're only going to get $1,400. That's the only portion that's refundable. And so that's phased out beginning at married filing jointly of $400,000. You can see that's a big increase from last year. Last year, the phase-out was at $110,000. So there's a lot. There's many, many more taxpayers that are going to get to take advantage of this child tax credit.
That middle class, where both spouses are working, they're in Dallas, Fort Worth, they're making $200,000 to $300,000. Under the old law, they never got any child tax credit at all. They didn't get the $1,000. They got zero. Under the new law, they'll get that $2,000 for each of their kids that are under age 17. Still doesn't pay for the kid, but it definitely helps out.
Kiddie tax, it's no longer tied to the parents' income. So the good thing here, Paul kind of has a basic recommendation here of making grain gifts at trust and estate tax rates, which is essentially 37% on gifts over $12,500. And so really what we're trying to do here is we're still trying to save on SE tax. So if you have farm kids, you know, it makes sense if they're doing some work on the farm that you're paying them a wage for that. So we're still trying to save SE tax. The good news is we don't have to worry about the kiddie tax and looking at back to the parents' tax rates and that sort of thing.
Although the bad news is when it does kick in, it's at a higher rate. So really, if you have a child that works on the ranch, and we all have kids that work on the ranch, maybe not as good as they need to, but pay them. My parents, my brother and I, we worked on the farm. I mean, I was driving combine at age 14. Actually, my dad flipped a combine, almost killed himself. You know, on a steeper hill, the transmission gear went out. But make sure you pay those kids an appropriate wage. Maybe not $300 an hour, but pay them something that's appropriate. And as long as they're under age 18, you don't owe any payroll taxes, so you reduce your self-employment tax. And if they're over that age, you can always pay them some type of commodity wage. Give them a heifer or give them some grain, whatever it might be.
State tax deductibility. So this is the other thing that's really affecting a lot of taxpayers, especially, you know, being in Texas. You're probably all very aware if you have a property within the Metroplex, the property taxes are very high in Texas because we don't have an income tax, so to speak. The real property tax is, and state and also sales tax, all of those taxes are now limited to $10,000. So for our clients that had high property taxes, they also maybe had some state income from others. They're paying state income taxes and also sales taxes. That's now limited to $10,000. So we have some clients that this is a huge hit, especially in some of our high tax states like California, Minnesota, some of the others. They were kicking and screaming when they found out about this law change.
I think I'll take over from here on out, but you jump in. But the one thing, I did 3 or 4 blog posts on this when it first came out. I continually got emails or phone calls. I own ranch land. I own farmland. My real estate taxes are $50,000, and you're telling me I can only deduct $10,000. No, the answer is on your farm, whether you're a landlord, whether you're a farmer, whatever it is, those still remain 100% deductible. We're just talking about the personal side, so that's something to be aware of. Here's one that definitely could affect or will affect ranchers, could affect them worse in the future, is Congress, in their proposal, the House, in their proposal, said that if you provide housing for your employees, and I know a lot of ranchers I have a ranch client out in Nevada, I think they have like 12 homes that they provide housing for their ranch hands, that instead of that being tax-free to the employee, to that ranch hand, and deductible by the ranch, we're still going to allow the deduction, but the employee is going to have to pick up the fair market value of that as compensation. And if you're an owner, as a C-Corp, as an owner, you can provide housing to yourself, and that's tax-free to you and deductible by your corporation. That is no longer going to be allowed, and you're going to have to pick it up as some type of dividend or compensation. That did not get into the bill. But the problem is this is a proposal by the House, and it was led by the Republicans. That's why I would say in the next 5 to 10 years, it is likely that something similar to this is going to happen. Now, what did happen is if you're providing meals for your employees on the ranch, those are no longer 100% deductible. They are 50% deductible between January 1 of last year all the way through the end of 2025. Then starting in January of 2026, you no longer get a deduction. So that's a big deal for a lot of our ranchers and farmers because they do pay for meals for their ranch hands and for their farm hands. Section 179, good news. Under the old law, it was $500,000, actually 510, 520, because it's indexed to inflation. For 2018, it was basically doubled up to $1 million. This year, it's $1,020,000. They did increase the phase out where it starts to get phased out up to $2.5 million. And they added in HVAC system, roof, security systems, et cetera, as being Section 179 available. For our farming operations, maybe not a big deal for other ones. We're going to use Section 179 to optimize our income because as a rancher, we can drive your income all the way down to zero or below zero, but in a lot of cases, we don't want to do that because of bonus depreciation. We want to elect out a bonus, bring that income back up, and then use Section 179 to get it down to the optimum level. And again, bonus depreciation. Does anybody remember when bonus depreciation came into effect? I'll ask CPAs this, and they have no clue. They can't remember. What happened on 9/11? You know, when 9/11 happened back in 2001, Congress wanted to stimulate the economy, so they brought bonus depreciation in. And at that point, they said, if you buy something new, We're going to allow you to automatically write off 30%, 40%, 50%, 100%. It's changed back and forth over the years. Well, starting after September 27th of 2017, you're now allowed to deduct 100% of every single thing that you buy on the ranch other than farmland or ranch land. So if you go out and buy, let's say, a section of land and it's got fencing and it's got other improvements, it's got a barn, all that stuff, because under the old law it had to be new. Under the new law, it's any asset, new or used. So that used barn, that used fencing is now 100% deductible. So that's why it's very important to make sure you allocate any of those type of purchases between land, which is not deductible, and all those other assets, because they're 100% deductible. That's why I'm saying a lot of ranchers these days, even with the fact the economy is down a little bit, we can get your income to zero or below, but we really don't want to. Here's just a couple examples. Rancher purchases used equipment of $500,000, $350,000 of tiling. I probably should have changed that. Is there any tiling in Texas? Does anybody know what tiling is? Yeah. If you go to the Midwest, tiling's a big deal. That's how they get excess water out of the ground, so I should have changed that. And then you buy a land with a machine shed that's worth $500,000. And I can tell you these days, $500,000 doesn't get you a very big machine shed, so it gets you a decent one, but not a big one. Under the old law, you could only deduct $175,000 on the new tiling using what we call 50% bonus depreciation. Under the new law, all $1,350,000, that's 100% deductible. Now, we may not want to make it 100% deductible because of some of the changes on losses that they've done, so we might elect out a 7-year or 15-year or 20-year, because that's 7, 15, and 20-year property. So we can decide, hey, we'll keep it on the 20-year because we don't want to waste the next 20 years depreciating that property, but we'll elect out of it on 15 or elect out of it on 7. And then here's another example. Here we're spending about $3.6 million on assets. Under the old law, the maximum we could deduct on that is about $1.3 million. Under the new law, we can deduct all $3.6 million. So it's a pretty good deal. But again, is it the best deal? The answer, for any time I ask a question up here, my answer is going to be that famous brand of adult diapers, which is, depends. Almost every answer I give you is going to depend. So, and then I just wanted to show you the actual tax savings. This is more of a successful operation that's actually reporting taxable income or voluntarily reporting taxable income. Under the old law, they had about $3 million of taxable income, paid about $1.1 million of tax. Under the new law, because of all these changes, they're down to about $200,000, saving about $880,000 of tax. And just the savings on the difference in rates, nothing else changing, just the difference in rates is about $83,000. So are you seeing that with some of your clients? Maybe not the farm clients, but we're seeing substantial savings in the right arena. Now, certainly, there's some areas where the taxes have gone up. Business interests, as ranchers, probably not going to affect too many in this room unless you do feedlots. If you have a fairly sizable feedlot that's generating more than $25 million in average revenue, and you have to add all of your entities together that you control, if you go over $25 million of revenue on an average 3-year average, then you're only allowed to deduct up to 30% of what we call adjusted taxable income. And before 2022, it's basically you take your net income, you add back all your depreciation and amortization, you multiply that by 30%, and that's what you get to deduct. Anything above that gets carried forward to the following year, and then you recalculate it, so on and so forth. However, there is a special provision for farmers, and the tax code has more special provisions for farmers and ranchers than any other industry or any other manufacturing industry. So the special rancher interest provision says you can elect to deduct 100% of your interest on a business-by-business standpoint, but in return, you have to use what's called ADS depreciation, which means you stretch out the lives and you deduct it on a straight line basis, and you don't get to use bonus, so you can't deduct 100% up front. You can still use Section 179, but it's only on assets with a class life, basically, of 10 years or longer. So like your feedlot's primarily going to be 10-year asset, but the grain mill, that's a 7 or a 5-year asset. Your farm equipment, your ranch equipment is all either a 5-year or 7-year asset. Those you can still take bonus depreciation and you can take makers on. So this isn't too bad of a provision. So if you do have a feedlot where you're generating revenues, because what is a typical feedlot? High revenues, very low margins, and a lot of it borrowed. That's my typical definition of a feedlot. Now here's, we've talked about the good stuff. Here's the bad stuff. We still don't know the answers on some of this bad stuff. Is under the old law, a farmer, let's say back in 2012, or a rancher back in 2013, 2014, when you were making more money than you've ever made in your life, supposedly, let's say you made $5 million and you paid tax on $5 million. And then you come forward to 2019 and you lose $5 million. Under the old law, we could carry back, a rancher could carry back a $5 million loss 5 years, pick up all that tax you paid on that $5 million of income, and use it as working capital. Well, the new rules say ranchers, farmers now can only carry back a loss 2 years. No other taxpayer can carry it back at all other than insurance companies. So you can carry it back 2 years. And the maximum loss you can carry back is $500,000 or $250,000 if you're single. So that's really going to change that dynamic. So remember I said, with bonus depreciation, we could deduct everything that you buy on a ranch during that year. So let's say you bought a ranch and it had $2 million of assets that you could deduct 100%, which creates a loss of $1.5 million. You can't deduct that $1.5 million. Plus, you can't offset it against self-employment income thereafter. So in that case, we don't want to take bonus. We want to bring Section 178, bring it down to maybe $50,000 or $100,000. To take advantage of that child credit, your exemptions, your standard deductions, and so on, not the exemptions, but the standard deductions, take advantage of those things. And the other negative is under the old law, you could carry back and offset 100% of your taxable income. Now you can only offset 80%. Now, actually, for me, for ranchers, that may be a good provision because that bottom 20% is taxed at a very low rate. So for a lot of our ranchers, I think the 80% number is actually not too bad of a number. But we do not want to generate large losses if we can help it, because we've lost all the ability to shelter self-employment tax.
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
Can you talk just a little bit about, so say they've got a farming operation, or maybe they've got another business line that wouldn't qualify under the farming law. How do those two work together if you have a loss that can't be carried back 2 years and then one that can be?
So let's say that your farm loses $200,000 and then you have another business that loses $100,000 and it's not a farming business. So the $200,000 farm loss, we can carry back 2 years. The $100,000 non-farm loss, we just carry forward and then we use it the subsequent year or however many years. And it used to be your NOLs would expire after 20 years. Now there's no expiration date on these NOLs. But I can tell you, I don't think in my 30-plus years of being a CPA, I've run across one NOL actually expiring. I have one coming up, I think, probably will, because they're never going to make any money. So our loss strategies, again, as a farmer/rancher, there are multiple things that we can do to increase income if we need to. We can elect out a bonus. We can, if you have deferred payment contracts, which is a little tougher with livestock, but if you have some type of grain that you're raising that you sell, we can elect out of those contracts, bring that income. We can capitalize fertilizer. We can capitalize repair costs. I did a blog post on that a couple of weeks ago. I was surprised how many email comments I got. We didn't know we could do that. Well, that provision's been around for about 5 years now. This isn't something new. And then you take Section 179 to get your income down to where you want it to be. Again, for those states that have state income tax, you have to be careful because a lot of states don't allow bonus, don't allow Section 179 at a very high level. Texas doesn't have a state income tax. You do have a franchise tax or
right,
fee.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to farmers too, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
But you got to have revenues, what, above $4 million?
It's above $1.1 million, I think, is the amount
million
now.
Before, you get hit with it too badly, and it's not a huge... But again, your property taxes are much higher than they are in our state. We don't have a state income tax, but our typical property tax on a house, let's say our house is worth $500,000, our property tax is going to be $4,000. I think in Texas, $500,000 house, you're paying what, 10, 12, 15, something like that.
And Paul, the other thing I'll just make on this, these strategies, those are quite different than past years in tax planning, right?
So, past years, we're always trying to bring our income down. Now it's much easier to get our income driven down, but we got to bring it up because we don't want it to be an NOL if we can help it. We want that additional deduction that we can get in future years to offset self-employment tax and so on, if you're a sole proprietor. Other business changes, Section 1031 exchanges, no longer allowed for farm or ranch property, personal property. So if you got ranch equipment and you go down and you trade that hay baler in on a new hay baler, let's say that it's been written down to zero and the trade-in value is $200,000 on that new one, that $200,000, you have to pretend like you've sold it for $200,000. So you're going to have a large gain over on Form 4797. But over on your Schedule F or over on your farm schedule, you get to deduct that $200,000. So for states like Texas, not a big deal, at least through 2023, as long as we have 100% bonus depreciation. When it starts disappearing after 2026, when bonus depreciation is down to zero, and let's say you buy a lot of farm equipment, you're up above that $2.5 million level, so you can't take full advantage of Section 179, that could start creating some problems. Another thing that they put in, not a big deal, could help you out a little bit. If you buy new ranch equipment, that is now a five-year asset. You get to deduct it over 5 years. If you buy used ranch equipment, that's still a seven-year asset. So we got 3, 5, 7, 10, 15, and 20-year assets on a farm. So that's just something to be aware of. And also, back in 1987, when we had the 86 tax law, that was the last time we had major tax reform. They brought in what's called 200% makers. It's 200% declining depreciation. Get more up front. Because of some changes on livestock, this is related to livestock, as ranchers under the 86 law, you're going to have to capitalize all your costs related to your breeding stock, and you wouldn't be able to deduct that until they went into service, until they were bred and actually had a heifer. Or until they gave an offspring. That changed to 150%. Well, now it's back to 200%, just like every other taxpayer. And this is just a quick, I'll skip through that. Again, we don't have too much on the state side. Any quick questions? I just want to take a little break. I think I'm going to grab a quick drink here. Any questions? I saw some people taking photos. Questions in the back. So the question, or you said special use, right? Okay. So the status for special use taxation, that's where if you're a rancher and let's say the fair market value of your ground, not as ranching, you happen to be near a city or something where you got some, the pricing is higher, you get to reduce your value for estate tax purposes. That provision is still there. However, the maximum amount you can reduce it is about almost 1.2 million. So let's say your ranch is worth 10 million. Special use value says it's really worth 3 million based on rental capitalization or rental income. That $7 million reduction, you can only reduce it $1.2 million. I mean, it has some help, but not a lot. The other provision, nasty provision about it, is that the family has to meet certain requirements. Plus, the family has to farm it actively for the next 10 years. If you operate as a ranch for 9 years and then in the 10th year decide, well, we're not going to do the ranch anymore, we're going to rent it out to the neighbor, that then means you got to go back and pay that tax to Uncle Sam. So that's just something to be aware of. Any other quick questions? Yeah, right here. Okay, so the question is there any, yes, that's a good point. Let me go back to here. I sort of said it here. So if you're a rancher, and let's say that you have a large capital gain from selling something that's not farm-related, just as an example. Let's say the ranch loses, because I have this situation with a client of ours in Colorado. So I'll give you an example. Let's pretend like that wage income is not business income. We think it is, we just don't know yet. Our client in Colorado is going to have a wage this year of about $8 million, just as an example, has the ability to create a farm loss of $4 million. Under the old law, we could take that $4 million farm loss and offset it against the $8 million of wages, and he would pay tax on $4 million. Under the new law, his maximum deduction on all business income is $500,000. So he, if wage income is not business income, he's going to pay tax on $7.5 million of income. So yes, there are some changes there. Now, if it's business income to business income, you can offset all your business income to business income. But if you have a large capital gain from selling, land's going to be okay because that's likely should be business income. But let's say you bought Google 20 years ago and you sell $2 million worth of Google for a $2 million gain and you got a $1 million farm loss, you can only take $250,000 or $500,000 of that farm loss to offset that gain. So there are some changes there. Okay, let's keep going. Let's get into the fun stuff. Has anybody here heard the terminology Section 199A? Yeah, that's that new 20% deduction. I think I'll just quickly give a little story on this. I want to see how we're doing time-wise. Oops, I think we're still in pretty good shape. When the tax law first came out, we had if you were a rancher and you sold any of your products to a cooperative, you got a 20% deduction based on the gross. So if you had a $1 million sale to a cooperative, you got a $200,000 deduction. Didn't matter how much you made on that money. Well, obviously that created what we call some battles between the privates and between the cooperatives. Not necessarily on the ranch side, but certainly on the grain side. So they came up with what they call the grain glitch fix. And there was a group of privates and cooperatives that got together. I was actually part of that group that got together and came up with the grain glitch fix. So I guess you can blame us for messing it up. But the National Grain and Feed Association asked me to come out to their annual meeting in Phoenix and give an hour talk on 199A. And what had happened, this thing was so poorly written that we as CPAs or doctors, or dentists, could go out and form a cooperative and get the same 20% deduction based on the gross. So you can see how this is going to cost a lot of money. So there was a writer called Peter Riley for Forbes magazine that mentioned that, and when he found out that this was going to get changed or eliminated, he called me and he wanted to get some background on this, so I filled him in, thinking it was purely background. I wake up the next morning, and the first words in his article was basically, per Paul Niefer. So I'm like, oh, I didn't really like that. So I asked the National Grain and Feed Association, I go, I want to do three slides, and the three slides are basically going to say what normally does not go together. First slide is just going to be 199 Cap A. Second slide is going to be 199 Cap A, and then a photo of myself. And, you know, I was quoted in multiple Wall Street Journal, Reuters, Bloomberg, all those. And then the third slide would be 199A, a photo of Paul Niefer, and then a photo of Stormy Daniels. Because in this same article, Peter then proceeded to talk about how Stormy was going to be taxed on her payment that she received from the Trump campaign, or the supposed payment. And they said, Paul, that's okay, but we have one request, one requirement. And I'm like, okay, what's this requirement? And they go, we just want to make sure that both you and Stormy are fully clothed. That was the only requirement they had. So we'll quickly go through how Section 199A will help the rancher, potentially. But again, this only has help if you have positive taxable income. If you use bonus depreciation or Section 179 to get you down to zero, this deduction is absolutely worthless. So I always lead off with that. We're trying to maximize this if we can. So here's the basics. Again, as Brandon earlier said, the C-Corp rate dropped from a maximum 35% equivalent down to 21. That's a 40% reduction. They wanted to make sure all these other C or S-Corps and partnerships and sole proprietors weren't going to go out and create C-Corps. So they came up with this thing that said, we're going to give you a 20% deduction on your QBI, Qualified Business Income. That's the acronym we use is QBI. So if you're a C-Corp, you don't get this because you already got your reduction in rates. Even though as a ranch C-Corporation, your rate went up 40%. It's on a separate trader business, so you got to look at it separately. There can be a wage or investment limit, but only if your income is over a certain level. And it doesn't mean your deduction is eliminated. You just have to do a separate calculation. I'm going through some of this. Here's the income that counts. So if you're a Schedule F farmer, all that income counts. If you have that trade-in on your equipment or you sell equipment, all that 1245 ordinary income counts. Rents paid what we call via common ownership, and we'll talk about that in a second because that's very common in the ranch industry. And then your partnership and S-corporation income, if you're a rancher or a business, that all counts. What doesn't count, if you sell farmland, ranch land, let's say you sell ranch land for a $500,000 gain that's taxed at capital gains rates, none of that counts. So if you have raised breeding stock, a lot of ranchers, my Nevada client that I, matter of fact, they still do all their accounting on Quicken. I just got it converted to QuickBooks this morning, so I have to go in there and change all of it. They have a lot of raised breeding stock that's more than 2 years old that they sell. And most of their income is capital gain income. It's not Schedule F income. It's capital gain income. None of that counts as income for the QBI deduction. So for a lot of ranchers thinking this is a great deduction, it's likely not going to gain you anything at all because you're not going to get the benefit. Wages, guaranteed payments, none of that counts. So common ownership, this was a benefit that they put in the proposed regulations, then expanded on the final regulations. A lot of our typical ranch operations, they'll have, let's say, an S-Corp or a LLC that's the ranch operation that actually owns the cattle. And then mom and dad and the kids have an LLC over here, LLP, LLC, that owns the ranch land that rents it to the farm corporation, the S-Corp or the farm LLC. That's what we call common ownership. And as long as those rents are being paid by an S-Corp or by an individual or by a partnership over to that entity, that also automatically qualifies as QBI. Because normally rents don't qualify just in and of themselves. So that's a good thing. Now, this can be paid by a C-Corporation. You know, that's certainly not true starting in 2019. There's some confusion on 18. IRS and their final regulations came out and said it doesn't apply. We're still saying, at least for 2018, you can probably do it because their proposed regulations were so vague on how they described this. And now, this is where we want brothers and sisters to be related parties. Because now, if you, let's say that your sister lives in Dallas, owns five sections of ground that she's renting to your farm operation, that rental income from your sister is now QBI. Whereas in the proposed regulations, it would not have been QBI. We have multiple. I'm not going to go through all these just because it gets fairly complicated. Let me just go to, here's a quick example. So this is the easy example. We got Rancher Ben. He nets $400,000 on his ranch, but has taxable income of $365,000. He paid some wages during the year of $65,000, has what we call qualifying property of $1 million. And that's part of those limits. Again, I don't want to go into too much into the weeds. He gets a tentative deduction of $80,000, which is $400,000 times 20%. However, he's into this phase-out zone, and I probably did 38-hour sessions for CPAs around the United States last year. on the new tax law, and we spent 4 hours on 199A. So we're giving you the brief discussion here. But there's a limit. It's the greater of 32.5 or 41.250, so it's 41.250. The difference between 80,000 and 41.250 is 38,750, but he's 50% into the phase-out zone, so we only reduced the 80,000 by 50% of that number. So he's down to 60,625, but then we have to limit it further to 20% of taxable income, which is that number, at 73,000, so they get the 60,625. And again, this is the easy example. Now we go to the next page, and part of that taxable income is actually 1231 gains that the farmer had or the rancher had. Now the deduction drops from 60,000 down to 33. And we have to apply this on every single business that you might have. Now we can elect to aggregate businesses together, but typically we have to look at each one on a standalone basis. So how many people in here actually sell products to some type of cooperative? Yeah, see, the ranching industry, unless you're raising, let's say, corn or wheat or something that you're selling to a cooperative, ranching doesn't have that much. In the grain industry out in our area, you know, I grew up on a grain farm, wheat farm, garbanzo, green peas, dry peas, that type of farm. Almost all the wheat in our area sold to a cooperative without fail. Because of that grain glitch fix, after we're done making this calculation, we then have to reduce that deduction by the lesser of 9% of that qualified business income related to the cooperative operations, or 50% of wages paid related to that cooperative operation. And as of yet, we still have absolutely no guidance from the IRS on this. You know, they're supposed to come out with it shortly, probably in time for about April 12th. You know, it's a mess. You know, and then on top of it, because there's this transition period from 2017 into 2018, any of the payments that the farmer receives that are the cooperative used under old 199, none of those payments or none of that income is allowed for the QBI at all. So for our grain farmers out there, we have three buckets of income. We have the bucket that's cooperative proceeds before that year end, we have cooperative proceeds after that year end, and then all other income, and then we have to come up with a number. So, and I've been saying forever that we need guidance from the IRS. We've heard that they know that this is a concern. What's today's date? I know it's right before lunch, and nobody wants to pay attention to me anymore, but it's the 29th, I think. What is the due date of tax returns? April 15th. And our tax software still cannot calculate QBI correctly.
We get updates, what, like every couple nights?
Every
it seems like
Sunday night we get an update, and they still cannot get this correct. And when this comes out, it's going to take them a full month to figure it out. So it's going to be a mess. Now, you can aggregate. So, like I say, the ranch operations got the ranch operating entity in the land over here, you can elect to group those together, which can help you, or you can keep them apart if it helps you better. And we only care about aggregation if your income is over 315,000 married, 157,500 for singles. So, any questions on that?
They're all experts now, Paul.
Yeah. Some planning opportunities. If you're close to that $315,000 level, we want to keep you under it. So come up with a retirement plan. Do anything, Section 179, whatever you can do, keep yourself under it, because your marginal tax rate as you go through that phase out can go up to as high as 57%, depending on the type of income you have. We're going to see a lot more except Texas community property, right?
Correct.
Yeah, you won't see it in Texas. You won't see it in Washington. Separate property states, you're going to see a lot more voluntary married filing separate tax returns, because they can maximize, you know, on this one. Your maximum savings probably is about $6,000, but it could add up. You can incorporate as an S-Corp. This is where you're a very successful farmer. You don't have any wages. Therefore, you get no deduction. If you simply set up as an S-Corporation, pay yourself reasonable compensation, you know, you could reduce your taxes by about $35,000 in this situation. Now, this is a fairly successful farmer or rancher. Maximize that retirement plan contribution. Now, the one negative about this is retirement plan contributions also reduce qualified business income. So your retirement plan contribution is not going to get you the deduction that it used to get you. You're only going to get basically an 80% deduction instead of 100% deduction. So that is one negative potentially with that. Enhance your qualifying income. Yeah, I won't go through all that. Since we're not dealing with cooperatives, I think I'll skip over that. There's lots of stuff on that side. And because I didn't see too many hands on cooperative, if you do have cooperative operations, come see us in the booth. We can go over those answers a little bit more in detail. With that, I'll just put up the contact information. I think we have about 5-10 minutes for questions, 7 minutes, something like that. Hey, okay, got one here and then one there. I'll go here first and then there. So the question is opportunity zones. Opportunity zone is a special provision that says if you have a sale of capital gain property, you can roll it into a business, which is a lot of them are in the rural area. If you're in that rural area, that allows you to defer paying tax on that gain for about up to 7 years. And if you hold it long enough, then you reduce that gain by or the basis, you get to increase your basis by 10 or 15%. And then after 10 years, any of the appreciation, not you always have to pay the tax on the gain, but any of the appreciation above and beyond what you invest in that fund or in that business is tax-free. So we're still waiting on some of the guidance. It could really apply to ranchers and farmers if they're in that zone that they could get some benefit. We're still waiting for they've come out with a couple sets of proposed regs, and it really hasn't answered that question well enough yet. But it definitely could be very positive. Question over here. So the tax on the, so under the current rules, if you provide housing for your ranch hands, you get to deduct, you get to depreciate the house, you get to deduct all the costs. The ranch hand owes nothing. I mean, it's just tax-free fringe benefit. That is still the law under the new law, but the proposal by the House was that they were going to say, if you provide housing to your ranch hands, that's going, the fair market value of that housing is going to be compensation to the ranch hand. And if you're an owner, you can't even have it at all. So did that answer the question? It's right now it's not taxable. Yeah. See, you're almost paying attention there, so that no, it's still deductible and non-taxable to the employee. So, question here.
Oh, yes. I'm slowly buying my family out of the ranch operation, and they've voiced some concerns that if I buy them out too much, their the amount of money they're making is going to turn them into some sort of hobby thing, and then they won't be able to write off deductions. Is there any truth to that, or do you know what I'm talking about?
Probably come see us at the booth. I mean, that one, I think they're probably... I could give you 17 different answers on that one, so it shouldn't... I think their concern is if they end up with too less of ownership, yeah, then maybe becomes a hobby, but that really shouldn't apply because the business itself what determines the hobby, not the ownership. So as long as it's a ranch operation, it doesn't matter if they own 1% or 99% of the ranch. The ranch is what determines whether it's a hobby or not. So I think they're wrong, or maybe they're... I think they're trying to pull one over on you, is what I think. Typical mom and dad, so, yeah. And is mom and dad here? Did I just mess it up by saying that? Okay.
Has there been any change in the ability to deduct contribution of conservation land trust?
No change there. That's still very favorable. I'm going to tell you, the IRS, this is a big hot button because there's been a lot of, I'm going to use the word slime balls out there that, you know, they'll contribute part of the golf course and they get a $30 million deduction. You know, and they've gone to court and they've lost every single time. So the IRS views, not necessarily in the farm area, but in the non-farm area, they view those with, you know, some skepticism, I'm going to say. Other questions?
We have approximately $600,000 worth of rental property, duplexes. We have an LLC. We're transferring 50% of it, 25% to each of our kids. Will they pay taxes on $75,000 worth or what?
So the transfer of property from you to your kids is a tax-free transaction. Now, the rental income that's generated off of that property will become taxable to them based on their ownership, but the actual transfer from you to, let me back up. What was my answer for every question I get asked? It depends. You're saying you're an LLC. If you have what we call negative capital in your LLC, and a lot of ranches or a lot of farmers, I was looking at one last week, we have a partnership, farm partnership, $6 million of negative capital, which is allowed, $6 million. If they gift any of that, that's taxable income. But in your situation where it's rental ground, that probably won't apply. It shouldn't affect it. Yeah, back there.
Yes, sir. We're setting up a family ranching operation, and what we've done is diversified by setting up several different LLCs. By putting the minerals in an LLC, even the water in the LLC, the farming operation LLC, and basically we did this with our legal to protect us, all right, that if one operation got in trouble or one operation had an accident, they can't come after. But how do you intertwine these when one is doing really well and one is not, and they don't want you, if we're gifting this to our children in a percentage every year on this, then how do you intertwine these LLCs without getting yourself into trouble?
It can get difficult. I mean, what makes great sense for legal liability purposes sometimes doesn't make as much sense for income tax or estate tax or FSA. Now, ranchers don't deal with, well, you deal some with FSA, EQIP and all that stuff. And LIP and LIF and all those. It gets very convoluted. Now, from the income tax standpoint, a lot of times we can aggregate those together if that creates value. Your situation, the problem is you're a very profitable one. You can only give a little bit of that, and the unprofitable one is probably the one you want to keep. And you can give all that you want, you know. So that's that. There is no easy answer there. I think, is this like the gong
I'm
show?
I'm going to cut you off.
The
okay.
Older people in here, you remember the gong show with the hook?
Yes.
We've just been hooked. So,
okay. But if you do have any other questions, these guys will be here. Will you be here?
Booth at 713.
Yes.
So downstairs, we're here today and tomorrow.